Entertainment Beats for All Mankind. Welcome back to Mars Vending Machine, the podcast entirely about vending machine-based technologies and all the latest developments. And also a show where we talk about For All Mankind, airing on Apple TV. My name's Dan Moore, and I'm joined, as always, on this habitat by Jason Snell. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Dan. The vending and coffee are over there, and they're just trolling us now, right?
It does feel like it. There's a lot of vending machine content in this episode.
This show has always had vending machines. It will always have vending machines. Even on Mars, there are vending machines. There are signs that say vending that way. There are big vending machines with a big screen right next to the coffee machine. Yeah, the whole deal.
I like that they look like old automats. They have little doors where you open the door and I guess take out your hot food
or coffee or
whatever.
Yeah, I know. Now we've covered the most important part of Season 5, Episode 3, Home. Nothing important happens in this episode otherwise.
Yeah, it's pretty sedate. Well, let's talk about what happened. So as you might recall, at the end of last week, we left our hero, Ed Baldwin.
Hero?
In a bit of a, protagonist, shall I say.
Exactly. He's got quote marks and a question mark around hero, but it's fine. He is what passes for the main character of For All Mankind to this point.
I mean, if nothing else, Ed Baldwin has strong main character energy and always has. So we start, he was left in a precarious state after staging a getaway last week. And now he's alive for the moment as the episode opens. He's not doing great. He is, getting medical attention. He is also having some sort of flashback to getting shot down in Korea. Yeah. A thing that I believe was alluded to in the very early seasons.
I believe so. Yeah, exactly.
You know what? This must be nice for Joel Kinnaman to not have to get all his makeup on and get to look like he does right now.
He got to shoot some scenes as a person who is not 80 years old. So good for him.
That must be pleasant. And it makes that just that much more, stark how well they do the old age makeup, I think, in this for him. And also for Margot, I think, is the other character who has aged the most since the beginning of the series. So we get to see both of the, we get to see him in his classic season one appearance.
Classic Ed.
So we have an ongoing plot with him as he's, having some medical issues of remembering this incident where he essentially has to eject over Korea. And he is finds another one of his squadron who is also bailed out. And the two of them are going to look for, water and stuff like that and trying to avoid the Korean military, which is trying to track them down. We'll come back to the end of that in a bit, but that's sort of the ongoing thread with Ed as he is...
Right, he has these flashes of that time in Korea that leads to a shocking revelation that nobody really asked for, but we'll get to
True, but I thought it was interesting.
It's a good
but
touch
was,
point. Yes.
Yes. So Lee is ensconced in the ISN compound. We've learned that the ISN the sort of biggest member of it potentially is China. China in this world, I think, is having a little more of an economic challenge since they are not part of the M6. Therefore, they don't have the Iridium access. And so they haven't quite had the blockbuster economic explosion that they have had in our timeline.
Right.
The governor, Lenya, he and his wife are talking about some of the challenges that they've had. We learn that he is angling to become president of the USSR, essentially.
Yeah, he's like the heir apparent.
Right, handsome former cosmonaut, now governor of Mars.
He calls the sheriff on the carpet, basically. And in a very funny moment, I thought the sheriff is like, look, I got this guy and this other guy. He said, oh, you got the old man and all the other people who needed medical help.
The guy great who got job. Shot, basically.
Great job. You're doing a great job, sheriff. And his wife is...
a bit Lady Macbeth.
Yeah, she's real intense in lots of different ways. But she does say, I think the line is, we must main control or you and I are both done. And it's like, we understand now the stakes of this, which is he has been sent to Mars. He's there to be in charge of Mars, right? But actually he's there to be successful so that he can politically position himself to maybe take over running the Soviet Union.
Bolster his profile.
Yeah, yeah.
And it also is one of the things that I think is interesting in this episode is it's sort of right? The politics of managing Mars via the M6 are tricky, right? Because it is a multinational place,
right.
But he is also a person with political aspirations that relate to a specific country.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got a couple different agendas going on here, and those agendas seem at times as though they may have some conflicts. Boyd, our intrepid investigator, goes to the sheriff, Palmer, trying to convince him that maybe Lee is not the right person. We learned a little bit more about her backstory, where she was a cop on Earth who went undercover at one point, and as a result, one of her colleagues got shot, and she essentially screwed up things so badly that she had to come to Mars to get a fresh start. Dima, our doctor friend who's been around for
yes.
a couple seasons, he is caring for Ed, and he tells Kelly about Ed's cancer, which Kelly is surprised and upset
yes.
to discover.
Yeah, and she's like, I want to solve this problem. And
yep.
he's like, No. He didn't want radiation. He has refused treatment. He has months or maybe weeks. And also, this is a very critical time right now. But it very much, she's like, I want to solve this. We can get a specialist up here. We can do this. We can get a...
Right.
And he's like, no.
He's done.
He has known about this for a while and is not interested. And I think that's an interesting dynamic, right? The kid is like, but Dad, I want to save you. And he's like, I do not want to be saved, basically.
Yeah. I thought one of the interesting things, too, in these early flashbacks, too, in Korea, is we see him a couple times checking. He has a picture of Karen.
He does. It's like the episode wants us to remember Karen, which, believe me, we remember Karen.
We do remember Karen. We also discover that Kurrigan, our competing company to Helios, knows about the Titan. The fact they discovered the possibility of life on Titan, which my note says, sounds like you have a mole, Alita.
Yeah, well, it's very funny, too, because she's talking to Margo, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, how does Kirk know? And it's like, oh, I don't know. I mean, maybe they're intercepting that. And she's like, somebody's leaking the information, dummy.
Yeah.
Margo knows.
Yeah. She knows all too well.
How much do you remember about 2010, the year we make contact? Do you remember that movie?
I saw it, but it's probably 30 years ago, maybe more.
I really like that movie, and I love the book. And this scene is absolutely written by people who love 2010, because they're talking about getting to Jupiter, and they're talking about aerobraking, which is a concept that is shown in 2010 at a time when it was purely science fiction, the idea that you could actually use the atmosphere to help break. But that's the plan to get to Titan. They're like, we can't get there in time, and aerobraking won't work with human ships. But they're like, which leads them to say, what if we got Sojourner 1 out of mothballs, Mars dust balls, and used that instead?
Yeah, so this is the challenge. But they're closer, right? The Mars is a lot closer, therefore it cuts the travel time, mm-hmm. and they can do things with the gravity and stuff that are probably easier to do there than they are to do on Earth. I did enjoy this yields the decision that Margo's like, well, obviously, lady, you're going to have to go up there because you can't manage that project from Earth. You have to be on Mars to manage it. And Alita is a little bit like, and they have some touching moments about the decisions that Margo's made about like Alita, and like Alita is very thankful for, she would not be here without Margo. I enjoy, there's a line Margo has at the end where she says, and I've only ever made good decisions.
Yeah, very
which
funny.
Is a very good line.
Very funny. Also, I love her pointing out the thing that I think we've noticed and talked about, which is Alita, this very important character in this show about space, has never been in space.
Never been to space, yes. I kind of like the 5 seasons in, she's finally getting her chance to go up with everybody else.
They checked that box when they were planning this season out. Yeah, for sure.
On Mars,
there's a vending machine. This is it.
There's a vending machine.
This is it. There's a sign, vending machine and coffee machine in the background.
Yeah.
In the square, in the central section, the promenade if you like Deep Space Nine, the Zocalo if you like Babylon 5. But that place, that place.
Yeah. The peacekeepers are also pulling people in. We also learned they called derogatorily woodpeckers, I think, because they are red and black.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're like basically pulling people in to interrogate them. Ed's pal in this flashback gets caught by the Koreans while Ed runs, and he starts freaking out in real life because he's sort of half in, half out of it, and Kelly tries to calm him down, and a peacekeeper comes in to be absolutely no help, no help whatsoever. I don't know why that guy thought that guy was being helpful.
Kelly's like, get out. Just get out.
Yeah.
This is an old man.
It's an old man.
Don't worry about it.
And this is one of my favorite bits in this episode. This is when we learn that the phones that they have are not called iPhones, Jason.
They're Newtons.
They're Newtons.
And they're like iPhones, but thicker.
Yeah, and older interface. I like that they have a nice cross between the sort of iOS 7 interface and the classic iOS 6 and earlier interface.
Slide to unlock.
There's slide to unlock, but the clock looks like the current clock, mm-hmm. and the, everything's kind of chunky and a little bit older. But it, I mean, it's also 2012, so
and it's got an Apple logo on the back. But they're just Newtons. They're advanced Newtons,
right? Because we saw the Newtons in the earlier seasons too. Yeah, and they've just sort of continued from there. Even though they made the iPod in this world, they made the iPod, and then they made the iPhone, but it was a Newton. Anyway, one of the people, I think Alita complains that there's more computing power in. Or no, it's the guy who's giving the tour of the Sojourner, basically from Mars and sending it to Alita.
Right.
Says that there's more computing power in his Newton than in Sojourner.
Yeah.
And she's complaining, of course, because she can't tell, like, oh, move your head and everything. And so
she's gotta
be her family laughs about it and is like, of course you have to go.
Yeah. And I think that having her teenage daughter be like, yes, go. It's very, very funny. But the husband is supportive too. And basically, nobody is going to give her the excuse not to go to Mars.
Right. Exactly. So she's going to do this.
Lauren Celia, asked me she's like, how long does it take to get to Mars? I said, well, like for reals, it's like 6 months, but they've got like fusion drives and stuff, so I don't know.
And less,
you know, but it'll be like a month.
Back with our peacekeepers, we also learned that Celia can't have one night stands on Mars, as her partner Fred points out, because you can't ghost people on Mars because you can't get away from them.
Yeah. I like her line where she's like, I don't even know what she says, but like she has a liaison with a woman and now she's blowing up my Newton, hilarious. Hilarious. Yeah. But she's you know, following that case, right? So she's like,
Kurgan. She's got her lead. And she needs to know what's in the crates. And, you know, her partner, Fred, played by, I don't know if I mentioned the earlier episode, Tyler Labine, who is another veteran character actor. I know him best as he was the best friend on the show Reaper many years ago. Mm. But he's popped up in a ton of stuff over the time. So he's playing a little more of a straight character here than I'm used to seeing him. But fun. These two have a kind of fun dynamic, right? The partners.
Sock.
Although I don't feel good about
this. I didn't even realize that was Sock.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Boy, I hated that guy on that show.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
Sure,
he's fine.
It's
here.
Fair. I feel like the partner of the guy who's investigating the corruption, I don't have high hopes for him making it through the end of this season.
Yeah, here's what I like about that character. I think you're right, because he seems so nice and upstanding.
Yes. Yes.
That makes me worried that he's going to die horribly, because he's going to be that well-meaning cop who gets in over his head and all of that. But we'll say again, we don't know what's to come. We don't, you know, we're watching these in order like you are. I like how she details, like, she's done some further research. She's like, again, something's happening. It's happening with the craters. Maybe that's how the guy who got killed was killed. It involves that. You know, what could be in the craters? There's that or in the crates. What the funny line, heroin, sex slaves,
nuclear bombs.
One of those.
Yep. One of those.
And then meanwhile, the woodpeckers are throwing like the girls, the high school girls.
Lily, Miles' daughter, and the Russian classmate get locked up. And while she protests, you know, that's our First Amendment to protest. They say, well, you're not in the United States. There's no First Amendment here.
Yeah.
That probably won't come back to bite them. Mm-hmm. Kelly is deciding to not go to Titan because she wants to be here for Ed, and Ed is being stubborn, or as I wrote, or he's just being Ed, which is that he doesn't want her to do that. He
absolutely
doesn't want
not.
Her, yeah, don't.
His whole point was to not get in her way, and now his infirmity is getting in her way, and he hates it.
Yeah.
He hates it, which is why this is not what happens in this episode, but I had a moment where I turned to Lauren and I said, is he going to pull a Gordo here?
Yeah.
Is he literally just going to go into an airlock? And walk out, because he does not want to get in the way of Kelly being a Baldwin, right? Being on a mission flying somewhere out in space, right? Like, he does not want to be in the way.
Yeah, I have a hard time seeing Ed pull that just because he feels too...
He's a fighter.
He cares about his own importance too
much. He's a fighter. He had main character energy. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
He's not going to do that, but he's going to do his own thing.
Yeah, but he does... we see in the flashback he's sucking the water off of leaves in order to stay hydrated and looking at the picture of Karen. And he's like, I'm not having any treatment, and you're not... gonna step away from
you're gonna do your thing.
Yeah.
Alex is, you know, distracted trying to fix his bike, and Dev comes to check on him and see how he's doing.
I like the scene too,
especially because Dev's like, did you remember to disconnect the battery? He's like, totally. And then he, of course, electrocutes himself. But it's a nice scene because it's interesting to watch the dynamic between these two characters. Whereas, I mean, Dev's got kind of a he's not quite a surrogate dad, but he's got like kind of like uncle or like, you know, older brother vibes where he, you know, really kind of, he feels protective of Alex.
I
think to him, Alex is like, he's the future, right? He's Mars.
He is, right? He's the Mars baby and all of that. I think also Dev, thinking it from a writing perspective, Dev is this wacky billionaire who has big ideas and plans and schemes and things. And what I like about how they've handled them is they've humanized him. Like every time we see Dev as a likable human being who has legitimate feelings for other people, like
he's not a sociopath.
He's not a monster. He is a billionaire with wild ideas, but he's not a monster. And he sees something in Alex, which I think is important. That you know, it's not just that Alex is Ed's grandson, but also he is, whether he sees it or it just is a what he represents as being the Mars baby and all of that. And like he's tinkering with the bike, and obviously that has resonance for Dev as an engineer. And Dev has his connection to Ed, so he says, your grandfather made the most of every moment. He was always pushing for me to make a mark. You know, Alex replies, and it's like they're talking about their relationship with Ed, which helps define Alex's relationship with Ed in a way that I think is maybe, you know, Ed was, I mean, he's been part of his life, but he's also this larger than life character. And so Alex trying to kind of reconcile instead of just being a snotty teenager, like what does his grandfather actually mean for him? And then Div gives him the advice, which is like, you know, he's dying, basically. Be there by his side. Yeah, you'll regret it if you don't go, and bring food, which I thought was really great too. And it just, I like this scene a lot. I'm really warming to Alex. I think Alex is really an interesting character. And this is exactly what the show should be doing, because it's like generations of Baldwins, right?
Yeah. Speaking of generations, we have, so Lily is in jail and Miles shows up to ask Palmer to get him out, but Palmer wants a quid pro quo. And we don't know exactly what that means, but we know that Miles is in tight with a lot of the people who are looking to like advocate for Mars independence. And we know in the previous episodes he was trying to basically have him be an informant. And so some deal is struck. Lily gets out, but not her friend.
Yeah.
I really enjoy this conversation between Lily and Miles, which I felt really nailed kind of the teenager and parent dynamic, where she's like, come on, we got to fight back like John Adams. And what about Robespierre?
Yeah.
And he's like, he got beheaded. What are you talking about? That's just a bad example. Yeah. And then she's like, you sound like grandpa. And he's like, I am not like your grandpa. Well, you're walking like him.
You sound grandpa.
I thought that was a great scene with the two of them. And because you can kind of get both of their perspectives right here. As a parent, you're like, yeah, don't go getting yourself into trouble. But she's like, come on, this is the point. We're supposed to be pushing back. We are the next generation, and we are supposed to be advocating for this kind of stuff.
This is one of the, I think, key things about For All Mankind, which is one of the things For All Mankind about is generational issues, because we skip 10 years a season. We are meeting the children of characters and the grandchildren of characters. And that's part of the point, is that this is a multi-generational project to expand humanity throughout the solar system. It has to be that way. And shows don't do this, but For All Mankind does this. And this is such a great example, where we only met Miles last year, but Miles had lots of issues last year. And yet here we are, and now Miles has made like a deal with the sheriff to collaborate in exchange for springing his daughter and only his daughter out of lockup for spray painting a sign. And what she says to him is, people talk about what you did back in 03, and now you're cozy with the sheriff. And it's just like, it's all right there, right? It's like, she is young and idealistic and fiery. He is an adult who is
making
compromises that maybe he shouldn't be making, but he's trying to thread the needle about taking care of his daughter. And like, that is that not the heart of generational conflict right there? It's really well
and
done.
It's interesting too, because your point is right. Like, that we see this, it's not only generational, but we only get a snapshot, right? We get more time with these characters have been doing all this stuff off screen in the interim time that we don't know as much about. We only get the broad strokes.
Yeah.
And then we zoom in for this period of time that's like, you know, maybe a few months or a year, where we're spending an intense amount of time with these characters. And then we'll leave again, and then we'll zoom back in for another, like, 10 years hence. So we kind of fly by. We're like on an orbit, kind of. Boyd is still poking around. She's down in kind of the place where all the craters live. We see her wandering around these little labyrinth and tunnels, the old Habs, where she sees, like, there's families all, like, in there and everything. She's trying to find somebody who she heard that saw Lee arguing with Yoon, who was the murder victim. She gets to talk to this guy, but he's kind of cagey.
Yeah, he's a witness.
He is a witness, He says he saw them arguing, but he doesn't know the details. And so, but then sees somebody kind of watching them. Boyd chases after this person and basically gets slammed over the head for her trouble.
Yeah, she's knocked out.
Alex comes to, you know, goes to make up with Kelly, who she's kind of, he's been kind of ghosting her after learning about Ed's diagnosis, and he brings food. Good for him. But then they find that Ed has gone AWOL.
He's gone. Ed is doing Ed things.
Ed is Ed
again, and. I mean, this is a really great episode, and there's so much good stuff in it. And as it turns out, there's a reason that they are doing all these special things in this episode. This is so great. Not only is Ed gone, but Ed is at the bar.
At the bar, trying to find some songs.
Playing Elvis out of the jukebox.
Because they don't have Sinatra.
Yeah.
And he's drinking, you know, vodka. And Alex finds him, and, you know, he basically is like, come on, get a drink. I like this. Is another great moment where he, you know, Alex downs the shot, and Ed kind of looks at him and goes, "That's not the first time you've done this, is it?"
Alex says,
"No." He doesn't react in any way.
No comment.
No comment. And they have a nice chat, right? Like, he talks about Karen
how much
she would have loved him,
yeah,
and how proud he is of Alex and all of this, and like their history, and it's a nice moment. It's a nice moment to have the two of them there, because we've seen them kind of at odds at a couple points during the season, where they, you know, he thinks, oh, you're a kid and you're bratty and self-entitled and all of this, but he also genuinely loves him and he believes in him, and you know, it's a touching moment.
This is, you know, after Dev's reminder to him of, like, you know, appreciate your grandfather.
Yeah. And Kelly finds them, and they all have a drink together nice moment where he reminds you, oh, this is his first drink.
Cough.
On Earth, Leda goes to see Margo again as sort of her goodbye. She thinks Margo should be the one going, which obviously she can't.
No.
But she thanks her for, you know, everything and believing in her and all of that. I loved one shot in this scene, whereas when they're leaving, Alita looks back at Margo as all the prisoners are filing out.
Mm-hmm.
And Margo does not look back. She just shuffles off,
yep,
which I thought was a nice moment of, like, she's kind of like head down. Like, this is her life.
This is her life.
Yeah. I'm not sure how much more we'll see of her.
Unless there's another wild twist where Margo has to be broken out of prison or something. But
can't put it past this show. It could definitely happen.
It could happen. I mean, remember there they all land on Mars, and they're the first people on Mars, and then they find that there's a random North Korean guy there.
Yep.
Yeah. It could be.
Boyd is in the hospital. Yeah. Fred goes to visit her. She's on leave for 6 weeks, which she's not happy about, because she feels kind of at loose ends.
Yeah, what am I going to do? Again, it's like not, you can't ghost people here. It's also like, it's not like she can go on like vacation or something. She's just going to be locked in her cubicle, go into the vending machine. Like, I mean,
go in the vending machine.
Yeah, that's what they should call it. Palmer gave you 6 weeks of a vending machine. Oh, no.
You can vend it all.
Vend it.
Yeah. So she's not thrilled about that. Ed gets brought home to, you know, kind of live out his time.
Yeah, which, no, this is basically hospice, right?
Yeah, yeah. But he gets to be at home. We also have, Alita is on her way, and her daughter tears into the driveway in her car to show up and tearfully hug her goodbye before asking if she can drive her car while she's gone. Margot, we have this moment where, you know, Alita's checking her watch and seeing that it's the appointed time. They've made a big deal throughout this entire season so far of, like, she meets her at 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
And it's 2 o'clock and, you know, she doesn't have any visitors, so she's just lying in her cell listening to books on tape or whatever and reading her scientific papers. And Alita's off in her Rivian on the way to Mars.
Yeah, yeah.
Kelly gets a chance to look around Sojourner, which I guess, I mean, somebody was already in there, but it amazed me that they could still pressurize. It's still pressurized. I guess
I looked this up on the wiki, which I should do more of because I've forgotten so many things over the years about this show. It took a hard landing, but it sounds like it was the engine that broke, not the, you know, the life support or something like that.
Right,
so
right.
They were able to get in there. The problem is that they're going to have to rehab or replace the engine with a modern something in
and
order
a bunch
to get
of the
it out
computer
of
and yeah. stuff. Because they said a lot of it had been scavenged.
Exactly.
And,
so they're going to they're gonna have to do that.
In our climactic flashback. Yes. We learn as Ed gets rescued and has the dog tags for his pal who got murdered that his pal's name was Shane, which, of course, is the name of his son who died back in season one. And then we get a really touching moment flashback where it's him and Gordo walking out as they're headed on their
Apollo 10
mission, though. It's also, you know. They're headed to the white light. And all the and yep. so he walks they're walking down and shaking everybody's hand as everybody applauds, and then at the end we see Karen is there.
Yeah, this is the moment
Shane is,
because I was asking myself, like, is this like footage from season one? Because Michael Dorman's there, and I'm like, okay, did they do that? And then I see Chantel Van Sant, and I'm like, oh yeah, I don't think Karen ever looked like that. I mean, maybe
sure,
but
her hair,
like,
seems darker, but yeah, she's,
but because, you know, she's an actress who works, and now she's back for this little cameo, essentially. But then I realized, yeah, they did it. This is the big send off for Ed, where they bring back some actors who used to be on the show in order to have this moment of him, you know, passing on, basically. And I'm very impressed. Like, I'm very impressed that we have Gordo and Karen. And then, yes, there's a little Shane.
That was the moment that got me here. Again, I have a 3-year-old. So that moment got me, where he's talking to his son who also died, like, right tragically. And you're like, oh my God, well, at least I guess they're all together now.
In space.
I mean, but it's a touching moment. I thought it was well done too, right? Because this, I think for Ed, that moment is kind of the, I don't want to say the high point, because obviously, you know, he has a lot of other accomplishments in this throughout this show, but like, that is a big moment for Ed, right? When he and Gordo went to the moon, and like, everybody's applauding. He feels like he's kind of achieved something, and, you know, his wife and his kid are there and all of that. And it, like, that combined with, I think, the flashback, which to me, do we need to know that his son was named after this guy? No, but no. I think that it was an interesting moment to allude to, like, probably what is one of his lowest moments in his life. And the thing that he feels, I think he carried that, right? That guilt over this guy. Like, he felt like that guy shouldn't have died, right? That guy shouldn't have died saving him, essentially.
And as he's passing to the end of his life, the thoughts that come back to him are about Shane Barnhill, the guy who died, and his son named after him who died.
Yeah.
And also Gordo, who died, and Karen, who died. And he's thinking of, I mean, it's totally understandable that he's thinking of this amazing, you know, these moments from his life, as well as the people that he has loved and lost along the way, and in that moment. Yeah. And I mean, there are a lot of white flashes in in these flashbacks that made me think, oh, I see what you're doing. It's the white. It's going to white. I did kind of chuckle where they're walking out onto the tarmac and it flashes to white, and I'm like, ah. And then they're like, and now they're in the spacecraft. And I'm like, it flashed to white. You did it already. And they're like, nope, because we're going to show the capsule over the credits, which is beautiful. And they did a great job with that too. And that's this is how you send off your essentially main character.
Main character, yeah, right. Yeah. And I mean, again, a testament. We didn't think Ed would necessarily make it this far, but he, you know, Joel Kinnaman has anchored this show since the very
43
beginning.
43 episodes of Ed Baldwin.
Yeah, so
it's a lot.
I mean, it's a lot, and I think, but he is, I think, left the show in very capable hands. Right?
Sure.
It's not. I don't think there are a lot of other shows. Like, you see shows where they like write off a lead or something, and they bring in a new, usually high profile actor, right, to replace them. I'm thinking of things like, you know, when Richard Dean Anderson left Stargate, right, and they brought in like Ben Browder or something like that. Mm-hmm. They bring in somebody who's kind of a name. But I think this show is so confident and strong as an ensemble now.
They're always rolling in new people, right?
They're always rolling in new people. You don't need necessarily a new headliner like who's like a big get or something. You have a very interesting, very diverse, very powerful cast of all these different characters. And it does feel like it leans much more on the ensemble than it does on any one character being kind of the focus. So I think, again, it's a transition for the show too, but I think it's a good one. And as you said, one that needs to happen given the scope of the show.
There was a time where if you said, are we not going to see Ed again? You'd be like, oh, I don't know. I think that's a bad idea. Last season, I thought it was surprising that they kept Ed, but they kept giving him things to do. And this season, we were very surprised that he was here and figured that he probably died. But I honestly, last season, I thought he'd probably die too, and it didn't happen. Right. But like, what I'm struck by is that the idea that you would get rid of Ed seemed impossible two seasons ago and doesn't now because of just the inexorable. You've got to keep introducing new characters. You've got to keep moving forward. Some of those characters are the kids or grandkids of characters we've known. Others are entirely new. And that's just how the show goes. Like Dev, it's a great example. Dev, this is his third season on the show, right?
Yeah.
Like he was a new ad, but now he's a key character. Miles was an addition last season, but he's a key character now. And they Kelly has been there since season two, and it just kind of keeps rolling like that. And that's how it has to be.
And I think what else is true is that you also just like, I think having Ed persist was in counterpoint to, as we saw at this in this flashback at the end, all the characters who didn't make it.
Yes.
Some people do. Some people last that long. Yeah. And like, yes, it's your main character and it just so happens. But like at the same time, you do want someone there who has that longevity to be able to look back at where we've come from and where we've gotten to and who's lived through all of that. Because some people will have that life.
Yeah. The ones who are left, right? This is, it reminds me of Roger Angel, the great sports writer for the New Yorker.
E.B. White's stepson.
E.B. White's stepson,
Catherine
great
Angel's
sports writer for the New Yorker. Yeah. And he lived to be 100 and
100? Yeah.
Oh no, like 102, 100 and a lot. And he wrote a few years before he died. 101. A few years before he died, he wrote a piece about being, you know, in your late 90s. And one of the things that always stuck with me about it is, you know, you're appreciating life and you're living your life, but also kind of everybody you knew is gone, right? He was the one who lived the longest. If you chart his first 50, 60 years on Earth, all the people who knew him, all his friends from then, he was the person who lasted the longest of all of them. Just that's how it happened. And I there's always somebody like that, right? So Ed and Margot basically are those characters right now. So it's good. It's good to, the show is resilient. The show doesn't need Ed anymore. Like life, you know, there are new people who have stepped in and Ed was at the end, but, I like that they gave Ed a send-off like this and kind of tied. I mean, more than a show like this usually does, right? He got the main character send-off. He got a flashback detailing an incident from his youth that informed his life that maybe some other character who dies in a horrible space accident on For All Mankind might not get, but yeah. Ed gets it and deserves it.
Yeah, agreed. I thought this was it's a really great episode.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot happens and it's very well written and, you know, we got to spend a lot of time with our characters and a lot of it's about the interaction between our characters,
yes,
right?
And
the
generational relationships and also a proxy, like with we're talking about Dev and Alex, but obviously Aleda and Margo, it is that proxy parent-child, proxy mentor kind of relationship that's also a key part of this. I couldn't help thinking in those scenes with Margo and Aleda about Wernher von Braun, right? Because he was Margo's mentor.
Mentor, yeah.
And now she's doing the mentoring for Aleda from prison, but, you know, which Wernher von Braun probably should have been, but anyway, that is one of the themes, and it has to be, right? It has to be when you've got the sweep of 50 years, you have to do stuff like that, but they did it in this episode really well.
Yeah, agreed. So I, you know, and now we are, we leave the past behind,
into
I guess.
The future.
And we move on to the future.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens next.
Yeah, next week, and that'll be next week.
Next week. Yep, next week at the so we'll punch up another order on the vending machine.
On the vending machine, yeah.
See what comes out.
Yeah, I hope there's a vending machine next week. Come on. Of course there is.
Yeah. I mean, it's Mars.
All right. We'll be back next week to talk about episode 4. But until then, dos vidanya, Dan.
Dos vidanya, Jason.